Welcome everybody to the City of Tukwila Community Services and Safety Committee. Council members present are Tosh Sharp and Cynthia Delstrinas Johnson. It's Monday, May 23rd, and it's about 5:30. So the first order on our business agenda is a contract renewal with Axon with Deputy Chief Eric Lund. So after this discussion, we will decide whether or not this gets forwarded to the 6:13 COW meeting and the 6:27 special meeting. So, Deputy Chief, at your convenience, you can start.
Thank you, sir. Hi, Deputy Chief Eric Lund, Police Department. What I'm coming here tonight talking about is our contract renewal with Axon Enterprises. And we started this contract in 2017, and this includes body cameras, tasers, and vehicle cameras, dash cameras. We were one of the first departments in the state to do all body camera and fleet cameras. There are agencies around us now that are just starting this process. So we, you know, it's pretty neat that we're one of the first to do this. So we're coming up on the end of the contract. It expires in August, and we're trying to get a head start on renewing the contract for another 5 years. Basically, there's two quotes you can see that we included. They're kind of broken down to fleet. And then the second group is taser and body cameras. And the way that they do this is part of the package deal. It includes a refresh if there's any hardware update. So if they come up with a new model, we'll get that at no charge. We did that with our current body cameras. So that was a refresh on our last contract. So the quotes included, as you can see, for fleet, the costs have gone up pretty significant. Well, let me back up. So what the average we pay each year on the cost of products and services, there's a chart, I believe it's the third page in the packet. The costs are about $200,000 a year is what we paid in 2020. The cost fluctuates because we've added on to the contract over the years. We've added on more cars, and we got billed a bunch of different times throughout the year. So we're trying to kind of consolidate it all into one. So the costs here for fleet, I got to rotate it because it came up sideways on my screen here. So for the fleet or the taser and body cameras, we're looking at $587,358 for a five-year contract. Sorry, hold on a second. My computer is having some problems. Okay, sorry about that. So the way they bill that is it's cost per officer per year. So we're going to have enough body cameras and tasers to outfit 61 officers for 5 years. That includes software licenses, digital storage, and a hardware upgrade after 2.5 years. That equates to about $117,471 per year for body cameras and tasers. For fleet cameras, our original contract was for 29 vehicles. We're going to now increase that to 41 vehicles. We've increased the number of our cars in our fleet several times since 2017. 41 will give us a few extra with some of the vehicles that we'll bring online. So anyways, the cost on that is $148 per car per month. That equates to a total for the contract is $385,390. That's about $77,000 per year. And just so the total amount for two contracts is $972,747 or about $194,000 per year. The original quote on this contract was for $1.2 million. We were able to talk them down and negotiate down to that cost there. So we feel good about the cost of the contract. Like Councilmember Sharp said, we're asking that if you agree to send this to the committee of whole meeting on June 13th, and then subsequently to the special meeting on 6/27, if you agree. That was a pretty quick overview, so I'll take any questions that you have.
Councilmember Delastinos Johnson.
Is this going to finance at all?
No.
It's just going to.
Yeah.
I think what would be the number that I was looking for, I think you explained it to me, but the way that it's presented in this memo can be a little confusing. And so if there's an opportunity to update, I liked your chart that's on page, I think it was 3, that shows the fluctuation of the costs over the years. It would be helpful if you could include in that chart the proposed cost of $194,000 per year on that chart, just so we could see the comparison of what did we pay in 2021 versus what are we paying this year. When you say that the cost is going to be absorbed by the police department, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Right. So
we have
budget savings due to staffing levels. So we're able to absorb the cost of this contract. However, if we do get up to our allowed staffing levels, we possibly would have to come back for a budget amendment.
Okay. Is there anything additional that we're getting with this contract that wasn't in the previous contract? Or that would explain the increased cost? Like, are we getting more cameras? Is it just because the cost of the product is just rising like everything else?
That's part of it. We are getting additional cameras. So the original contract was for 29 vehicles. This is for 41. So the reason for that is we've added, with labor contracts, there's several officers that have been granted take-home cars. That includes SWAT personnel, sergeants. We've added additional vehicles to our fleet since then. So we will have about 6 extra sets of cameras for if we have to add additional vehicles. One of the things that is we're going to be replacing the motorcycles with vehicles for our traffic unit. And so because they're a marked vehicle, they'll require a camera as well. So we're going to need the additional cameras for fleet. And for body cameras and tasers, the original contract was for, that's the wrong one, sorry. Body cameras, and we're asking now for, oh, where the heck is it here? Sorry, my computer only lets me turn the sheet clockwise, so I have to keep clicking to go.
I know what you're talking about.
I'm not, my back doesn't hurt, I'm just trying to turn my head here. $61,000. And so the thing that's confusing about how much we've spent in the past is every time we added on something, they would start a new contract. So we would get billed separate times throughout the year. And this is all going to, we're going to have one bill for everything during the year, so it makes it a lot easier to track. It was the billing and it was all very confusing. So we're hoping to simplify that process as well.
Okay. Thank you. My only, my comment or feedback on the memo would be to include some of this information that you just shared, for example, how many body cameras we had before versus what we're getting now, and the number of vehicles versus the number of like fleet that we're putting cameras in now. I think that would be helpful when it goes to committee of the whole to put in the memo, just because I feel like other council members will ask that. And I don't disagree with the policy. I've seen the data that shows what has happened since body cameras were worn. It's just an increased accountability and transparency measure. And so I agree this should move forward just with additional information in those areas that I think would be helpful and prevent questions on the diet.
The one thing is that it would take me a long time to get to that simple answer, because we bought the original contract was for X amount of cars, and then we added five more, and then we added five more. So there were three contracts, and they were, it was, you know what I mean? It was really confusing. And same with body cameras. We added, you know, we started out with the original number, and then we added some more, and then we added additional. And so it wouldn't be apples to apples, but I'd be able to, I guess, explain that and get people to the answer on that. But I could definitely do that.
Thank you.
Yep.
Body cameras and tasers are, to me, as critical as the car and the cop in the car, right? So I would never dream of a day where you guys are not rolling out with a camera, because I think it protects the officer just as much as it safeguards the public. I just do have some basic questions about just kind of that involve your cameras and equipment. If you do decide to add officers, how do you get the equipment for them? Do you just take it out of the budget, or do you have to make, let's say you hired three more guys or gals, do you just absorb that in the budget and make it work, or do you have to go to council to get the money?
To get additional equipment?
Yeah, like you need to buy... You outfit three more officers and you don't have the cameras. How do you go by getting the additional equipment for those guys?
The one thing that's nice about the body cameras is I can assign it to different people. So like I have one assigned to me, but I'm rarely out there contacting people in uniform. So if somebody needs my camera, you can just quickly reassign it to them. And then so we don't need to have one per officer. So if we did, I mean, our budgeted amount is 77, you know, so we don't have to buy 77 cameras. There's a lot of people who don't on the street. So it is nice, though, since the officers are in uniform when they're coming to work, now that they drive their patrol cars home, they're in uniform and in a patrol car, they're required to have a body camera. So they need to be outfitted with at least enough for a patrol. When our detectives work, anybody who works in uniform where they can come in contact with the public are required by policy to wear a body camera. So there is ways that we could make it work with that number. 61 was just basically getting everybody that could be in uniform most often for the job assigned a body camera.
Okay.
So if we hired five people, we could make.
Okay, you got enough equipment for your people.
Yes.
Okay. As far as the data, that the camera footage from the car or on the officer, how long is the data stored?
It depends on what type of crime is associated with the call, and I don't have the...
Let me stop you. I'm sorry, Deputy Chief. There's no incident. Of course, if there's some incident, you guys keep it for longer based on your needs, but, like, I'm rolling out today with the camera. How long do you keep that footage? On a typical day, nothing happens.
If nothing happened at all... it would be 3 months, I believe, for a non-incident. A misdemeanor is 2 years, a felony is 7 years, and there are certain types of crimes like certain felony types of crimes that we need to keep indefinitely, complaints against officers indefinitely, any serious offense or something. You know what I mean? Like there's it's all set by the Secretary of State's office of the retention schedule.
Okay. And how often is the footage reviewed, like by command staff or like just checking on your officers? You know, is there random reviews of the footage, or is it only when a flag of some kind comes up that you review?
There is no random checking. Anytime there's a use of force, we always review those. Anytime there's a complaint that's brought to our attention, we review the body camera footage for that. A collision that involves an officer. But there is no random checking. We do review anytime there's a records request, and our record staff has to, you know, for public disclosure, they have to review the video and do the redaction. So they are reviewed then. If they notice anything that's out of line or a potential complaint, they do notify us. So, but no, there's no random checking. It's just when there's a need to review the video.
In the event that staff reviews the video and they notice something that's inappropriate, what's the procedure? Do they work for the police department, or are they independent of the police department?
So it's our record staff that works in the front office. And so we've had it happen before where somebody's reviewing something and something doesn't match up on the video, or there's something that could be a violation of policy. They will let me know about it, and then we will do an internal investigation.
Okay. There's a crisis counselor on staff, sort of, right?
Yes.
What's the policy when that crisis counselor is with the vicinity of a potential, person in need of her services with the camera's presence?
So she doesn't have a camera because she's not an employee or a police officer in uniform, but we try to be cognizant of private or sensitive information. In the event that it is recorded, that's always redacted prior to it being released to anybody. So audio, any images of the person that are captured, you know, we blur out. If somebody has their license in front of them, we blur that out. Anything with some personal identifiable information is blurred out, or the audio is redacted. So we try to turn off the camera, but you're not required to. So anytime, but after there's a request for the video, then it is redacted. So that information does stay private.
Well, my concern is that the crisis counselor is supposed to be somewhat independent to help the victim. And if one of those cameras picks up incriminating information, does the potential, how do we call it, victim, customer, however you want to phrase it, does that citizen know that they're being recorded and that the information that they're giving to that crisis counselor can be used against them at a later date?
I don't believe, well, everybody always knows they're recorded. That's part of our policies. We're required to let people know they're being recorded. I'm trying to think of a situation where if our MHP is talking with somebody, the officers will usually stand back away from that interaction, close enough where they can help in case something bad happens, but they're not going to be involved in that conversation. So the video camera more than likely won't pick up that conversation.
The taser, you have tasers for all your officers, or is it just for a set amount?
Anybody in uniform that will take patrol calls or working off duty will carry a taser.
So it's a mandatory thing that officers carry a taser, is that right?
Yes.
And then a question that's sort of unrelated to that, the camera thing. You're transitioning away from motorcycles to cars.
Yes.
Oh, why?
Usually, the biggest reason is inclement weather and the dangers associated with riding a motorcycle and inclement weather. You know, it rains a lot here when it's icy or snowy. It's caused problems for years where we have to find a vehicle for those traffic officers to drive. The cost of maintaining the Harley-Davidson motorcycles is extremely high. There's a lot of downtime. They're not very reliable. And the cost of a vehicle over a motorcycle is not that much more expensive, believe it or not. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but We're going to purchase trucks for them for all their equipment that they use for accident reconstruction. So there's several agencies that use that Ford F-150 police rated truck. And they're the same cost as the Explorers too. So usually what happens is we have to have two vehicles for one officer, and that's just not very cost effective. So we'll have one vehicle per officer in the traffic unit.
Right on. I think a motorcycle is probably a little more dangerous for an officer, my opinion. So unless there was some huge benefit to having them on a bike, I don't see it. Maybe you guys do, but I think it's a good idea. But that's my
opinion. I was a traffic unit sergeant, and I didn't ride a motorcycle. And that was partly because my boss at home didn't want me to. So I think in a big city like Seattle, where you need to navigate through traffic, motorcycles would have an advantage. But here in Tukwila, there's not much need for them. And they're dangerous. And in inclement weather, it's not very reliable.
Right on. Well, thank you, Deputy Chief. Do you have any other questions for him?
Okay.
Appreciate the presentation. So now I guess this is where I ask, would you be comfortable forwarding this to the next meetings and what have you?
Yep.
Okay, good. Right on. I'm for it too. Let's forward it. Let's get it done.
All right. Thank you.
Business agenda item B, a contract with Partners in Employment. Tracy Galloway, Parks and Recreation Director. We'll be making the presentation, and if all goes well for a presentation, we forward it to the 6-6 consent agenda.
Great. Good evening. For the record, Tracy Galloway, Parks and Recreation Director. I am here tonight to bring you a contract as part of the Youth Ecology and Restoration Stewardship Program. It's a contract with Partners in Employment. It's our hope to present this to you that it could be forwarded or authorized to have the mayor sign and then forwarded to the consent agenda in next month. So just a little background on this. Last fall, we were given the opportunity to apply for a grant, and Alina Perry was the one that spearheaded this application as part of her Green Tech Lola program. And it was through the Washington Recreation Parks Association and the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction and AWC, Association of Washington Cities. They were putting together opportunities for that program called SEEK, Summer Enrichment Engagement Program. So we had the opportunity to apply for programs. And so one of the ones we applied for was this Youth Ecology and Restoration Stewardship Program. And the intent was to work with Partners in Employment and another community organization to engage youth through the spring and summer. And that was kind of how we would engage and enrich for that program area. So we applied, and earlier this year, we received notification. So we came to you in February to the meeting to let you know that we had received funding for this program as well as two others as part of that SEEK grant. So this program is really about tonight is about doing a contract with Partners in Employment for their part of the Youth Ecology and Restoration Program. It's a reimbursement grant, so we'll put out the funds in advance, but there's a not to exceed this $43,940 to support the youth in this program. Partners in Employment is going to be working with, the scope says 10 youth, but they're really, they let us know that they're actually going to work with 12 youth. And they get to work in the field and get job training related to ecology and stewardship work. So the bulk of the budget for this project is really to pay the students that are going to be employed this summer, spring and summer. So that's it. You guys have any questions?
This is a program that's going to happen in the summer. The youth have already been identified by Partners in Employment.
Yeah.
Where's the connection with the city? Like, who's going to be doing the teaching, the ecology, like?
So they will do that. Partners in Employment has been doing this work. They've already been working with Olena and the Green Tech Lola program. Okay. And so they've already been doing a lot of this sort of ecology restoration stewardship work. So they're going to be leading those efforts. They are going to do this work next door to us here at Tech Lola Park. That's kind of our main restoration site that has been we've been using with the community. So that's where this work's going to happen this spring and summer.
Is it still connected with the Green Tech Lola program? Like, is this also connected with that, or how?
Well, Alina works with different groups under the Green Tech Lola umbrella, so she's. And she currently is on maternity leave, but so we'll just help. They'll be leading all the efforts with support from Parks.
Got it.
Staff. Yeah.
Got it.
On that site. So, yeah.
Yeah. This looks good to me. Yeah. I'm good with it. Thank you for answering my question.
What happens if you don't get the funding?
Well, then we would not be able to accept the funding. We already have been guaranteed the funding.
Right.
So we just need authorization to spend the funding that we've been.
I guess let me ask the question this way. What happens if council says no?
Then we don't do this program and turn back those grant funds.
And then what happens with the program itself?
It doesn't happen.
Now, can you do it next year?
These are funds that are part of the American Rescue Plan Act funds. So I don't know if there'll be a program next year.
Okay.
But there is no cost to the city to do the program. It's 100% funded.
Right on. So. Well, I'm good with the program as well. Do you have any other questions for her?
PI is going to be paying the students, yeah. And they're just seeking reimbursement for us, and we're just taking from the grant funds that we already were approved.
So they'll submit information, the background information to us. We'll pay them for their services, and we'll submit to the larger organization for reimbursement.
Okay. Look forward to hearing more about the project and the students.
So it looks like you have two people that are way okay with it. So we'll see it at the 6-6 consent agenda.
Thank you. Thanks, Tracy. It's good to see you.
Good to see you both.
Brings us to business agenda. Item C, an interlocal agreement for the minor home repair program. Slated to present this is Stacey Hansen, Human Service Program Coordinator. And again, if all goes well, this will be forwarded to the 6-6 consent agenda.
Good evening, Council and everyone. Stacey Hansen, Human Services Program Coordinator. So this is probably some new information for you, but we've been the lead city since 2005 applying to this King County for Community Development Block Grant Funds. We created an interlocal agreement with four other small cities so we could bring this resource to our communities. We're partner cities with King County because of the size of our city, and so we have a more competitive application applying together as a team, and the City of Tukwila has been the lead for 17 years, and now it is time for our friends for the City of SeaTac to step in and take over the lead city position, and they have been working robustly to get up to speed. And part of that process is for us to change our interlocal agreement, basically handing off the lead city position to the City of SeaTac, and King County requires that. No fundamental basics from the program change at all. It literally is just who's responsible for applying for the pre-application, the full application, managing the technical assistance with the partner cities, and that is we pay our partner cities, then King County reimburses us, and now we as a partner city will be paying, and then SeaTac will reimburse us. So they're taking the lead role in this, and we have decided for equity's sake that anybody who participates in a interlocal program like this one is that everybody should take a turn for at least a few years to be the lead city, because you learn a lot. And I think the integrity of the program is definitely there, and the other cities are very committed to it, but this really helps see how much work goes into managing the program. And we don't get reimbursed for that, so we don't have like an administrative fee that we're charging the grant. All the money goes to our residents, basically, in the form of paying our contractors who do these repairs for the residents in all four partner cities, which are Tukwila, SeaTac, Covington, and Des Moines. And we've been have run a pretty robust program, and we're just kind of changing direction just with the lead city right now. And SeaTac is ready to take that on, and we're going to let them do that because it's a great learning curve, and it is time intensive, and it is good for everybody to have an opportunity to experience all the aspects of the program, not just be a recipient, but also be the partner with King County and build that relationship as well as with the other cities. So what I'm asking tonight is if the council could send us to consent to allow approval of this signature by the mayor as a formality in order to change the interlocal agreement. All of the cities have to assign sign the agreement for King County. So that's what I'm here talking about tonight. And I'm happy to answer any questions you have about the interlocal or about the program itself.
Just to be clear, the only thing that's changing that the mayor is signing this agreement for is that SeaTac is taking over the administrative responsibilities. Is that it?
That's it. And they're just taking over the administrative piece directly with the county. We still run our own programs independently. They're taking over the county partnership piece.
I'm curious, how much time did you use to spend on that, either on like a monthly or annual basis? Just curious.
It was a good 30% of my time, and it depended on how complicated some of the billing issues were with the other cities and how, if invoices weren't done correctly and having to go back and correct invoices. So it would take about 30% of my time. And just to be clear, that contract runs typically from mid-February by the time we get the contract from the county, and we cut it off in the beginning of November so that we can get our bill into King County and so we can correct any errors that there might be in partner city bills and that sort of thing. And so it wasn't a January 1 to December 31st. It's a little tighter time frame. And so we're even in a tighter time frame right now as we're changing hands with the lead city. So we anticipate in June that we'll get our contract with King County and be able to start providing the service to our community this year and probably go till the end of November with the funding and the repair projects.
All right. I'm fine with it.
How does this work with the cities? Did they have to volunteer to be the lead, or is it like you draw straws, or at the end of this, is it like a year and then you're back in the seat again because SeaTac's like, I'm good with it, or how's that work?
Not it, no. That's kind of after 17 years, that's kind of the rule for Tukwila, let me just say. But when SeaTac agreed that it was time for everybody to step up and participate at this level, they said, at least for 5 years. Now, there isn't anything in stone around that. But yes, when SeaTac is ready to hand that off, I will not be at the front of the line.
Okay, but there's potentially, is it a year that they get to do it, or you said 5 years?
I'm thinking at least 5 years.
It's off your shoulders or the city of Tukwila for at least 5 years?
Yes.
Right.
And just to be clear that every year I would apply for funding, that human services myself or previous human services staff would apply for these funds. And we knew that every year there was a potential we would not get funded because for equity purposes, right, we have to have all of the applications and review them fairly and equitably And so I always told the partner cities that we may not get funding. You cannot count on this funding. So you need to have a plan B. So for 17 years, Tukwila has had a plan B. So I will always have a plan B. So.
Right on. Well, I've heard a lot of good things about it from folks that use this. So it's a great program. I'm looking forward to seeing it on the 6-6 consent agenda.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. So business agenda, item D, 2022, first quarter fire department report. Deputy Fire Chief Norm Golden will do the presentation. And this is a discussion only. So, Deputy Chief, when you're ready.
Yes. Okay, he's coming in the room right now.
Oh. Do we stand for him? Look at this guy.
Where should I sit?
Anywhere you like, buddy.
I guess the owl captures us no matter where I am.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
All right. So I got our first quarter report. You guys have a copy of that. So excited to be like in person, real close and comfortable here. I wanted to point out a few things, and then I'm available for questions, things that you see that you need to explain. First thing is we're driven in the fire department basically by calls and our response time. If you noticed in the slide, sometimes the numbers don't quite jive, so I want to explain that first. Our first quarter calls, we ran 1,503 calls, and that number 1503 is the one I use. That's where we're dispatched, and we went all the way to the call. There's a difference. Sometimes we'll get dispatched, and we'll get what's called code green canceled. Another unit will pick it up. Turns out that this call is not in Tukwila, it's, you know, in Seattle or whatever, for different reasons, and there was 99 of those calls. And so you'll see one of our charts, we talk about 1,602 dispatched calls, and we break down those dispatch calls by the different, like, medical call, false report, a fire, hazardous condition, and so on and so forth. So for that chart, we used everything that we're dispatched to. For calls that we actually went to, that gave us our response time. Everything is real normal. This is nothing's out of the blue. Our response time is about 6 minutes, which is the best in zone 3. That's a very fast response time. We ran about 1,500 calls in the first quarter. We're on track for what we did last year. I pulled the calls today. Last year at this time, we're about 2,300 calls. And we're at 2,500 today, so it looks like we're trending a little ahead. But summertime kind of throws it gets busier, so that makes sense as we're heading towards summer. Overall, we run about 69% of our calls are medical calls. That's their average is usually 70 for us. That's very normal in the fire service. Our data is suggesting that we're trending up about 14% coming out of 21. With COVID, the pandemic, everything's kind of up in the air, right? Pandemic caused more of medical type calls, but a lot less people are out and about, so a lot less calls. So the 14%, I think that's more getting to normal, but we won't know. We look at a 5-10 year swath of time to find out what our overall call volume is doing. Also with this first quarter, we're still in the pandemic. COVID-19 is still present in a lot of our calls. It's people are still changing their behaviors, but we're starting to see people come out, come to the mall, get back to in office. A big thing that we put on hold, usually we'd be looking at our strategic plan. We like to look out like how we're going to run fire services. As you know, we've had a community committee look at providing fire services, so we put our specific strategic plan on hold while we find out what's going to happen with that, which is going to be before the committee tonight and going in through June. And we're hoping to have some direction by July. And then we'll shift gears and make our strategic plan work based on that direction. A big thing I want to point out is our fire marshal's office. There is a huge change. Our Fire Marshal Heyman's no longer with us. We have a new Fire Marshal, and we re-strategized what the Fire Marshal's office is going to do. We had a backlog, and Fire Marshal Nevins has attacked that. And the reason why he's had the ability to make a big change there is, unfortunately, we had some injuries, but these people are light duty, meaning they can't go out on the rigs yet, but they're able to come in and do the work in the Fire Marshal's office. And we actually had three people working in the Fire Marshal's office on light duty. Those people usually have to go to PT appointments. One guy had to have surgery. It's in and out. But Fire Marshal Nevins has been doing a really good job using those people and getting some big projects moved and this backlog taken down. A huge deal is the records plan. We literally have a room full of boxes with paper records. That's how we used to do business in the Fire Marshal's office. There was just nobody to go through and digitize that. And the clerk's office came, spent some time with us, gave us an idea of how to digitize them to make them so they'll meet the city's storage requirements. And we have the staffing to start doing that. And we thought this was about a two-year plan. And Chief Fire Marshal Nevins thinks with our light duty folks, he should have the majority of that done by the end of this year. So that has started in the first quarter. And that'd be amazing, get it done in a year. And a big thing out of the Fire Marshal's office, we assigned Captain Johnson to a fire investigation unit with friends of ours at Puget Sound. They now have full-time investigators, and he is a full-time person that we put into that unit. And so he's been there. He's going to be there for the pilot programs in 1 year, and I'm looking forward to, I don't have any data on that yet. I'm looking forward to the first data coming out. Will probably be in the third quarter to say these are the how many calls they've been working on. These are how many calls are specific to Tukwila. Their whole area is Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority and Tukwila, but they're going to do data, you know, specifically for Tukwila, even though the whole unit runs our calls here. And reason why that's important is we could look at if this is a full-time piece of work, because we're putting a full-time member into the unit, and we'll decide if, you know, we're getting the benefit of the are we offsetting them or are they offsetting us. And right now I predict that we have about 1.4 FTE worth of fire calls, meaning that for one FTE we're getting 1.4. That 0.4, where does that come from? Puget Sound right now has extra bodies in there, so they're kind of doing some of that work for us. But the idea is through efficiency, the number, the caseload that one FTE can carry is going to be higher. And, you know, nobody's carrying anybody's load. Everybody's putting in equally. But right now they are subsidizing a little bit, and that's just part of getting the plan stood up. So I'm looking for that data, and hopefully that's what it'll say. And if it doesn't, we'll evaluate that. It is a pilot program where we're able to either increase it, decrease it, or opt out. But of course, one FTE is about as low as you can go for being involved in the program. You'll see on our overtime, it's kind of confusing. There's a lot going on that chart. The thing I look at is where is overtime that I can control, where I can make a difference. Minimum staffing is set by agreement. So with the collective bargaining agreement and city policy is we'll have 13, minimum of 13 on every day. And that has been the lion's share of our overtime. We usually have 18 people per shift. We have three shifts, and we've been running at 16 and 17 per shift for the last 2 years. So you'll notice the biggest increases in minimum staffing overtime, not only percentage-wise, but actual dollars. That's the huge part of our overtime. Some of the decreases in overtime, we used to have an overtime person at the mall every day because the radio system was out. That radio system has been repaired to the satisfaction of the fire marshal, so that program is no longer doing overtime there, which I'm very thankful for because we have what's called overtime fatigue in the department, especially with we have a little run of COVID going through. And it's been really difficult where people are being forced to work overtime. And usually I like to have overtime be something people, yeah, hey, it works great today, I can work. But people have a good attitude. They know it's important, and having overtime to get people on the rigs is the number one priority for us. And so it's great when we can get rid of these programs that was costing them all money, costing our people, you know, their overtime. So that was a win-win. Lastly, and I'd say one of the most important things, is our personnel and staffing issues over this first quarter. We were able to get Tammy Sunderland. She's the technician, administrative technician in the fire marshal's office. That was a huge gift for the city. She worked as a temporary employee, so we had a really good look at how she would work and her abilities, and she is fantastic. We did a testing process, and of course, you know, everybody goes, okay, inside track, she came out number one. She would come out number one in any testing procedure. She's just that good. So she's on full time with us, and she's also a lot of, you know, it probably sounded like Fire Marshal Nevins, you know, was the greatest thing since sliced bread. Yeah, he's pretty great, but she has been the driver behind making these things happen. She's just fantastic. And then we have two promotions. You guys were there when I had the honor, was the acting chief, and got to let you guys know about Captain Browning getting promoted, and Battalion Chief Kelch. That was April 1st officially, but you know, in the first quarter, that we knew that stuff was going to happen. And our first quarter employee of the year was Corey Merrill, firefighter, just a guy that's part of everything. It seems like every volunteer project, anytime we're asking for somebody, that person puts his name in every time. So with that, any questions about our report or any of what I gave you orally?
How are we, can you talk a little bit more about the backlog in the fire marshal's office?
Yes.
You had said that we're making progress, that right now we're making faster progress than we were before. We, I believe we approved a contract with Puget Sound Regional Fire to help us in that area. But I still see 255 in the backlog. Master plan reviews, permit inspections.
Yes. So basically what we're talking about in the backlog is in development side, meaning people's plans and all that, and they're waiting for fire to get through that. This is first quarter. That's where it really took off. And these are the things where that backlog, I believe, is almost completely caught up. And that's because one of the light duty people, Brian Lucero, is certified. He was in the fire marshal's office. Unfortunately, he had a terrible knee injury, but it couldn't be a better fit for a light duty person for what we needed there. So that's a great example. We had basically a fully trained deputy fire marshal that was able to come back in, and he's working full time on light duty in between his physical therapy stuff. And I believe that backlog is almost completely caught up. And Chief Whitward, weigh in if you have any further on that, but that's my understanding, is we're almost completely caught up on those numbers.
I actually do have a couple of comments. We have two contractors that we have established contracts with to assist with that development review, and they are doing really good work. It has taken a couple of months for Chief Nevins to work close with them to make sure that they're meeting the needs of Tukwila, and he is feeling more confident with them. I know at one point, and I believe it was towards the end of the first quarter, first part of the second quarter, in that Chief Nevins actually had taken that backlog down to zero. So this is a little delay in this report, but it is doing very, very well right now. So good question.
And that 255 includes our new, and the last term that I heard our deputy fire marshal use is construction development's going bananas. So I think that that means we expected a huge downturn in the pandemic. It wasn't so. The development kept going, and Tukwila is really still going, and it's a place where people have a lot of opportunity, and they're seeing that in those numbers.
That was my only question about that. Thank you.
So I don't know what is zone 3. So when you present
documentation. Okay. That's just zone three. It'd be nice to know who's in zone three.
Sure.
So we know who we're competing against, who we're better than then, right?
That's right.
So, I mean, who is in zone three for those who don't know, like myself?
Sure. So the counties have all broken into zones. And in our county, we have zone one, which is Kirkland, Redmond, the east side. We have zone three, which is everything south, South King County. And then we have zone five, which is just Seattle. Those are the three main things. So zone three is going to be Renton Regional Fire Authority, Puget Sound Regional Fire Authority, South King, Auburn area, which is Valley Regional, and then Tukwila District 2, which is North Highline, White Center. Des Moines is part of South King. There's like Black Diamond and Mountain View, which is, you know, Auburn, the Auburn, King County part of Auburn. Who else? SeaTac, of course, is part of Puget Sound. Port of Seattle's in Zone 3. There's like 13 or 14 organizations, but it's all South King County. So it's not East, it's not Seattle, it's all South King County. And so when you compete in Zone 3, like those response times, that's a pretty big deal because those are our neighbors. The whole training, all the training we do is all for Zone 3. We all train together. So that consortium that we're a part of is for Zone 3. Same thing with our ValleyCom dispatch that we're one of the owners of is for all of Zone 3. And I believe it's like 13 different organizations.
Well, any document that has us on the top side of it is good. Just make sure you kind of emphasize that, I would say, so that when a citizen or someone's looking at it, we can say, where's Tukwila? Okay, yeah, we're right there, right at the top where we should be, right?
That's right.
So you mentioned something about breaking down calls based on Tukwila, mm-hmm. right? You can find out
correct.
What calls you make that are Tukwila related. Is there a way that you can add another layer to neighborhood? So for example, we have folks that are in the Ryan Hill area that say that they rarely see Tukwila Fire respond to them. It's more of a mutual aid call.
Okay.
And, you know, from their perspective, they're like, hey, I see taxes. Why don't I see Tukwila Fire on the side of that truck? It doesn't really matter because y'all are professionals, and whoever's in Zone 3 will get it done. It's just a sense of pride for them. Why aren't we getting served is the feeling.
Right.
So if you are able, your department is able to show like, hey, we actually do make it out to you. We just didn't make it out to your call. It would probably make them feel a little more comfortable. Is that possible?
It's more than possible. So our whole area is broken down by square grids that are about 1 mile by 1 mile square. And it has a number like 2105.
Mm-hmm.
And we can grab like how many calls do we go to in 2105?
Mm-hmm.
And so for a neighborhood like that, what we could do is find out the geocodes and say, okay, there are these eight boxes, and we can break that out. And when I say we, that's the guy, Jake, that does that for us, that knows how to use that. But we did just migrate to a new program called ESO mm-hmm. that should allow us to also get a little bit deeper in there. So like for a community report or a neighborhood report, especially if somebody's interested in it, that's great. You know, a citizen says, hey, how much does the fire department come to my neighborhood? You know, I live in this neighborhood. We could prepare that and then present it, and it'd be a great jumping off point, especially in a neighborhood like that where we go, the reason why Seattle comes there is because they're 40 seconds closer, and our rigs will come in also. It's just an automatic deal, and that's why we serve that area.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we could break it down, you know, right to that one small, you know, geo and say this is what's happened and how many times have been in your neighborhood, so... I guess, you know, I could produce anything you ask for, but if you get some from a citizen, the best thing would be somebody going, hey, I'm interested, and all I need is their neighborhood. I'll look up the geocodes, we'll prepare that report, and then we could either deliver it or you could do it if you're doing town halls or whatever and say, this is how it goes. But I'd love to join you to say, this is the why.
I think they would be happy with if you had, like, a chart and it just broke down the neighborhoods how often you respond to it,
mm-hmm.
just so they see that. Hey, all right, Ryan Hill's on that list, and our guys go out there and help us. I mean, it doesn't, you know what I mean? So, or whether it's Allentown or Tukwila Hill or wherever, people are curious. They're saying, like, you know, they pay their taxes and they pay for the fire department. How often do they serve my neighborhood? And it's right there on a chart.
Yeah, Yep. So, yeah, we can do that because we have had a change. You know, we opened, 52, 51 are both new. They're in new areas, and we're looking at that data, and we changed how a 911 call generates for stuff, and we've been looking at that data, and that's when we get into those geocodes. For example, to get to the mall, we have 51 and 52, both right there, and I was able to see there's about 18-second difference between stations, and I rebalanced the calls based on staying within that super fast response time.
Mm-hmm.
So just so it's more even, and the reason why it's even is not just, hey, I want the firefighters to have even workload. The reality is I look at availability, and that means when 911 call comes in, is the closest rig available to go? And if you make one station way busier, they're not going to be as available. And so that's why the distribution comes in, and you kind of, yes, I could get this station there quicker, but when it comes to, by changing it 18 seconds, it's a little bit longer, you're going to have the first due closer, more, most likely.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a fun thing for data people, but for me, it's like SimCity just going, how can we make this, the best? And I feel you, having a rig show up with Tequila on it, that's a big deal.
It is.
Yeah.
Do you have any other questions for him? Well, thank you for the discussion. Appreciate you not hearing that bad breath underneath that knife.
That's in case you guys caught me on something.
I'm on the fire department for getting sick. Thanks, buddy.
No way. We can't have you guys go down.
So. No. We're already short people.
All right. Thanks for your time. I know.
Anything for miscellaneous?
Not for me.
No, for me either. So having said that, I will just adjourn the meeting at 6:26. 6, 7 maybe?
Got it.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.